We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
On second down, pass is caught. That is McCaffrey. And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone. A dome silencer from Cam Newton to Christian McCaffrey. And it's a game again, 56 yards for the touchdown.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Tom Keegan is one of God's great sports writers, and we are delighted to welcome him into the program. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Tom.
Good morning, Mully. Good morning, David.
I don't know if your phone blew up like mine did during that Last Dance thing. I believe you were on the panel with me as we were talking about Tony Kukoc or Michael Jordan or some such thing.
Yeah, you were on the panel with me, but yes, it blew up. You know, as a writer, you just bust your tail. You're working constantly, writing all these columns. Never hear a word from anybody. 2 seconds on Last Dance, and my phone blew up, not just that night, but for weeks. People finally getting around to watching it. And did you work in Chicago? Or it was the weirdest thing. I mean, as recently as like a week ago, was that you I saw on the Last Dance? Yes, it was.
Well, you've worked everywhere. I mean, you've worked on every coast. You've worked in the Midwest. You've been everywhere and done everything. So it's got to be bizarre for you. I got a call from a guy who lives in Mauritius, which is an island off the coast of Africa, a guy that I met through a buddy of mine in London, and he saw me on that thing. And I was just like, I said to my wife, did anyone not watch that?
I don't think so. It's incredible. That's got to be the best rated thing ever. I mean, just the timing of the pandemic and the sports starved culture, it was amazing. People I didn't even know were sports fans at all were just bombarding my phone. It was pretty funny.
What did you think of the job that they did with it?
I thought it was good. You know, it was through Jordan's eyes, but they didn't disguise that. A little bit of dancing on Jerry Krause's grave. That got a little heavy, I thought. But, no, I thought it was well done, and really well done, actually. And I'm amazed that they hung on to it for that many years. So a lot of the film in it and stuff, that was that kind of the plan? Like, I haven't heard a real good explanation of that, how you had all this footage behind the scenes, and then all of a sudden it comes out, huh? How did that go down?
Apparently, it was they taped all this footage, and Michael released it after seeing the parade in Cleveland and LeBron being hailed as the greatest player ever. So he was like, "Okay, go ahead and make a documentary on me. Don't let him forget about me." And look, no one ever was like Jordan. I mean, that was extraordinary, and they had a lot of good footage, and they went back and interviewed him and all that. So it was pretty fascinating. There's been some hard feelings from some Bulls players, obviously, Tom, but, you know, I'm with you. I thought it was well done. The Krause stuff was rough. I mean, man, they really kind of, you know, maybe missed the mark on who the villain was, but such is life.
Yeah, you know, my wife's not a huge sports fan, but obviously she paid attention to the Bulls when we lived there. And when he's talking about Isaiah and Isaiah's talking about that, she said, which one's telling the truth? And I said, oh, Michael's telling the truth. And she said, that's the impression I got. Isaiah just doesn't come across real likable at all.
So, Tom, you're out in Boston. Obviously, the big news in the NFL is that the Patriots signed Cam Newton with a really incentive-laden deal. He can make up to $7.5 million. Seems like a real smart, calculated risk for Bill Belichick. How has Boston and that market reacted to the news?
Well, you know, it's funny that you would think they'd have been more devastated with Brady leaving, but for the most part, I think people were realistic. He's 43 years old, or when he next plays, he'll be 43 years old. They'd already bought into Stidham, so there's a, you know, a little bit of disappointment they don't get to see Stidham necessarily. He'll still compete for the job, but I think it's, like you say, it's just a bargain, and it's a good move because let's say Newton is the starter, which I would think he's the favorite. Then you've got Jared Stidham, who's I think is going to be really good as the backup instead of Hoyer. And if Stidham wins the job, then you've got Cam Newton as the backup instead of Hoyer. And quarterbacks do get injured. So they definitely got a lot better at quarterback no matter who ends up winning the job.
It just seemed inevitable that he would wind up there because there was a need for an upgrade on behalf of New England, and he's looking for a job, and he probably feels that that he can walk in there and be the starter tomorrow, right? So it just comes down to his health. That seems to be the great mystery.
Yeah, his health, and you know, Belichick took a chance that because they talked early in the process, and it sounds like Belichick basically said, well, you know, we're interested in you. We don't have starter money, but you will be able to compete for the job. But, you know, after you see what's out there, if you're still interested in us, we'll be interested in you. And he correctly read the market that nobody would give him starter money because of concerns about the foot and the shoulder. And, you know, he waited for him to come back to him. And if Newton plays there 1 year at backup money, and then cashes in with a huge contract elsewhere, that's kind of par for the course for NFL players. They play for a bargain with the Patriots, and then they cash in elsewhere. Usually with the Lions, it seems. The Lions are getting a bunch of former Patriots.
You know, nobody ever worries about how a player may fit into the locker room culture in New England because it kind of speaks for itself and it's well established. But I think when you talk about how the coaches will have to adjust, how do you see Cam Newton's skill set and Josh McDaniels' schematic, approach meshing?
I think that they'll definitely custom it to Newton, and I don't think Cam will have to do any real adjusting. I think they'll be happy to have a guy who can run. And when you've got a backup you like in Stidham, you're not going to be worried about Newton running. It's a big part of who he is, so let him go, and they'll tweak their offense big time, and they'll have fun doing that. And, you know, all these coaches are mad scientists, and this is a different sort of guy, obviously, than they've had for 20 years. Brady was not a runner, obviously, and I don't think that'll be a problem at all if Newton can still play, and I think he can still play if he can be healthy, so that it all comes right back to that, and kind of a low-risk, potentially high-reward move.
As a longtime baseball guy and an author of a bunch of books on baseball, what's your take on the horrible, horrible negotiations that have left us with a 60-game season? Do we just ignore that now and concentrate on some baseball? And what does the future hold for the sport if they can't get their act together?
I think that you do ignore it now, but know that it's going to come back even uglier in 2021. It didn't surprise me that they had trouble because this was a negotiation unlike any other in that it benefited one side to have a short season because they lose money if they had a longer season, and it benefited the other side to have a longer season because they get paid per game. But the thing that you know, 60-game season doesn't bother me. I think probably 162-game season is pretty intimidating for a lot of fans, especially for a sport that, let's face it, has gotten pretty boring because the pace of the game is so brutal that there's so too much standing around and everything. But the part of the game that's not boring ever is extra innings. So what do? They come up with a hokey rule to make sure the extra innings don't last long. No, how about doing that in like the fourth inning if you want to mess with baseball? They put a runner in scoring position to start the inning. That is so hokey. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. But if the coronavirus allows them to have a season, and you could say that about all the sports, I think once you get into the final weeks, it'll still feel like a pennant race.
What are realistic expectations for the Red Sox?
You know, the shorter season helps all the teams that are underdogs, and they just don't have a good enough rotation to contend for 162 games. But if they're, you know, they do a lot of those openers where they have the bullpen pitch the game. If that works out for them, maybe they could hang in there. But that's not the Red Sox team that won 108 games 2 years ago. No Mookie Betts, no David Price, no Chris Sale. He had Tommy John surgery. He's out for the year. Craig Kimbrell's been pitching for the Cubs. It's just not the same team it was 2 years ago. So I don't think they'll get to the playoffs. It wouldn't be shocking, though, because of the shorter season.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the shorter season opens up the possibility for a lot of different teams. I read, I forget who it was that broke down what the Pirates' record was. They were like a half game behind the Cardinals in the first 60 games, and then they wound up losing the division by 22 games. So, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see who wins and to see how we feel about it after the fact. If there is some team that maybe has an unexpected fast start, if they are willing to make a trade, if indeed the trade deadline is in late August and they try to win one because they know they'll never be in the position again. I think that's a fascinating storyline to keep an eye on.
It definitely is. And the other thing is, you can see some of these hitters who go on a two-month tear, like Kevin Moss with the Yankees way back when, Shane Spencer with the Yankees, guys who just have two great months and then you never hear from them again. Well, that guy you never hear from again could be an MVP or a Rookie of the Year, or, God forbid, someone could hit .400.
I kind of want that to happen. Is that wrong? I mean, I know it's wrong, but there's part of me that wants somebody to have that kind of year, preferably on the South Side. That's just the way I feel about it.
Yeah. You know, I was there when they first changed the name. I went to a game with my sons, and one of my sons said, well, they should call it the GERF. But the great thing is that all-time low interest or something. Interest rates were at an all-time low. And we were like, there were the three of us and like another 200 people in the ballpark. So
yeah.
It was like, yeah, that kind of fits.
Guaranteed low rate field. Yeah.
Yeah, right. they got decent minor leagues now, don't they? Aren't they building things up?
Yeah, oh no, they've been in a rebuild. Yeah, they had
they're
the Chris Sale trade, and those guys are coming around, and Kopech is going to be able to pitch this year, and Moncada could be a MVP type. They've actually some of these trades they made may finally pay dividends, and looks like they're ready to make a move. You know, the thinking is maybe they have a winning season this year, and then be ready to make a long term move. But who knows? With the shortened season, it should be a ton of fun just to get some sports, as you well know.
Definitely. I was there during the heyday with, you know, Wilson Alvarez and Frank Thomas and Ozzie Guillen, that whole crew. That was a blast. I wasn't there for the World Series team, but, geez, I wish Ozzie Guillen was still a major league manager. It's a lot more interesting when he's a major league manager, you never know what he's going to say. And he was a good manager.
Yeah, he's great on the radio and TV. You never know what he's going to say still.
He's a regular. Yeah, we have him on. He's great, Tom.
Yeah, I've always loved Ozzie Guillen.
Tom, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you. Appreciate
thanks,
your time.
Tom. Take care, Tom.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep.
That is Tom Keegan. He's just one of God's great men. David, there are so many great Tom Keegan stories out there, like legendary stories that you hear from other people. He's just he's worked everywhere in the country, done everything, and just a great dude.
Good guy. Good pro.
Marquette man, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, from way back. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
Ron, given all of these conversations that you're having with your football team, do you think your football team's name should change?
I think that's a discussion for another time. And again, I feel that a guy that's, you know, my age, my era, you know, that was always part of football, the name of the Washington Redskins.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is Ron Rivera. He was on yesterday with Mac and Parkins, and that was his answer to that question about the team name of in Washington and whether it should be changed. There is a newfound push about that. I don't know if you saw this, David, but there was a fake tweet from Patrick Mahomes that was something like, unless we change the team name, I will no longer play for the franchise in Kansas City. And it was a phony. It wasn't an actual message from Patrick Mahomes. But somebody wrote a column somewhere asking, what if it was real? What if a guy like Mahomes took that kind of a stance? You know, I don't know that the Washington franchise has anyone that's capable of taking that stance. And I don't know where you're at with one nickname versus the other, but fascinating to think about the power that different players have and how a face of an organization, a face of the NFL, can carry a lot of power with him. And I think one of the fascinating ideas about that is to look at a guy like Cam Newton, who was the face of the Carolina Panthers, who was the face of the NFL. Certainly when they were going 12 and what did they go? 14-1 one year, something like that, some crazy 15-1, and went to the Super Bowl, and he was an MVP. Maybe he went 12-1 that year, missed a couple of games. I don't remember the specifics, but he's not going to have that kind of power anymore. And you only have that kind of power for a limited time. Even Tom Brady doesn't have that kind of power anymore.
So regarding the Redskins, I think that when you hear from Ron Rivera, obviously his conversations with Daniel Snyder probably limited what he could say and maybe what he wanted to say. And I respect his limitations there if he's worried about hierarchy or if he doesn't feel like he is the right person to be the spokesperson on that issue for the Redskins. But I would disagree with him vehemently about the timing of that discussion. This is the ideal time to have a conversation as complicated and as important as that one in Washington, D.C. regarding, you know, the Redskins as a symbol and as your mascot, and in terms of, you know, how that relates to the Chiefs, I don't know, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be qualified on the Chiefs mascot and what it stands for. I would need to do more research on that and to feel qualified to have an opinion. But I can tell you, in looking into the Redskins mascot issue and having compared it in the past to what the Blackhawks do in Chicago and other mascots that have been, you know, renamed, and other franchises that have taken steps, the Redskins essentially honors dishonor, and it is a racist term. And so when you have a situation like that, I think that it calls for a conversation, it calls for change, and we are in the midst of a national social revolution. And this is the ideal time to begin dialogue to get that changed. And I think that's my opinion. And if there are people who work for the Redskins organization, like Ron Rivera, and then that is, and they disagree with that or they agree with that, I think that they need to be heard. And we need to do a lot of listening in this country in the past 6 weeks or so as we've been discussing ongoing conversation. But we also need to do a lot of talking, because as I think it was Theo Webstein who pointed out, silence is complicity. And when you have an issue as important as this one in Washington, D.C., I don't know how you're on the fence at this point. So I was a little disappointed in Ron Rivera, as much respect as I have for him as a man and as a coach.
Yeah, I can't tell you the conversations he's had. I can't tell you what the viewpoint of I think I know what the viewpoint of the owner is. It's been very consistent about having loved that franchise from the time he was a child and respecting the history of that franchise. And, you know, he paints it in a completely different way when he talks about it. And we don't hear from him very often, but I did attend a thing. It was called CEO to CEO, and he was at Northwestern for a show that was on PBS. And it was him, and it was the Dallas Mavericks owner, Mark Cuban. And their personalities couldn't be much different. To hear Daniel Snyder tell the story, he basically works until he collapses, and then he's stretchered home for several moments before he's stretchered back to work so he could keep working. And the only break he ever took from his constant work, including he worked 7 days a week, he would go into the office and he would have a sandwich and watch the Redskins. That was the only break he ever took during his work week. And, you know, just what a driven man he was and all this stuff. And, you know, it's fascinating to study him, because apparently, you know, he grew up with little, and he got he was described as kind of desperate to make some money in his life. And he got a loan from a guy that some investor gave him like $1 million to start a business, which failed miserably. But in the course of doing that, he figured out a way to have magazines that were aimed specifically to, like, say there was a woman who is pregnant. He would have a magazine aimed specifically to her, all the products that you would need. It was an advertising thing, and then he would put those into different offices of doctors. And it was interesting to hear, but he is a very strange agent. And again, his only passion in life apparently is connected to that franchise, and he just basically has said he'll never change that name. So there's got to be a lot of pressure put upon the guy. And meanwhile, I think he's fired more people than he's hired, if that's humanly possible. The turnover in Washington has been just ridiculous.
Yeah, and you're seeing this, the reason the conversation is necessary is because you're seeing all sorts of things happen across the country, which is why when the fake tweet came out from Mahomes over the weekend, people, you know, did not think that it was that outrageous, because you're seeing people take social stands all the time. Now, obviously, that was false. That was a phony story, fake news, if you
yes.
will. And Patrick Mahomes has been more active the other way. He has teamed with LeBron James in terms of their voter registration cause. He's been vocal in his support for social justice issues. He has been, you know, an agent of change in a positive way, in a positive direction. And I don't know how Chiefs players feel, and I don't know if that's been an issue in Kansas City as to the extent that it has been in Washington, D.C. and around the National Football League. You know, when we talk to Mike Florio, it will be curious to get his opinion on this, because he has been very outspoken in terms of what needs to happen and when. And he's been calling for this for a very long time.
What I liked about the fake tweet is the idea that, you know, a player only has a certain number of sunsets in his career where he can control things around him, right? And in other words, you know, a guy like Mahomes wields a pretty big stick these days in terms of his popularity, his importance to the franchise, and his importance to the league. And so he can make a greater impact than maybe other players can. We see that happen all the time in the NBA with different players. We don't see it happen in the NFL. Very rarely do we see it happen in the NFL because of the nature of the sport, because of the frequency of injuries, and because of the shortness of careers. And so you don't have that kind of sort of firepower in your arsenal in terms of being able to influence what goes on in a team setting. I just wonder how different that's going to be for Cam Newton. And it's been a while now since Cam Newton was the MVP of the league and was the kind of guy that wielded the power to control things happening around him in the NFL. And I don't know that he ever really embraced that power, but I think it's fascinating to think of his different role now in New England at this stage in his career than maybe the one that he enjoyed when he was flying high in Carolina.
Well, he's going into a market in Boston that doesn't have a great reputation or history for being terribly accepting or inclusive of black athletes. And I think Torrey Hunter told a story about how every contract he ever signed had a no trade clause, including Boston, because of the treatment he received there. And it was backed up by anecdotal evidence from other people who knew and remembered and recalled that. And that's sad. And, you know, if you're Cam Newton, you go into this situation with the Patriots, a couple of things. Number one, I think you are worried about your football mortality. You're worried about that. That's your primary focus. You've got to play well enough in this one-year prove-it situation that says that you still can be a starting quarterback in the NFL. The other aspect is that regardless of his limited reach in terms of his star power anymore, the fact that he's not an MVP the way he was in Carolina, he's also arriving in Boston at an ideal time because of what's going on nationally, what's going on in every NFL city. These conversations are more welcome than ever. And this, you know, noise is not necessarily noise because people are listening more and I think being more responsive. So this might be an ideal time for Cam Newton to exercise whatever rights he feels he has and voice whatever opinions he wants.
All right, we're going to bring Mike Florio to the conversation next. We'll talk to Mike about what to expect on both fronts. Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Hey, buddy! Hey, buddy! We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get big, big!
We get big, big!
NFL insider Mike Florio.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. We love our chance to talk to Mike Florio. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Michael, good morning. How are you?
What's going on?
Morning, Mike.
How are you?
Well, we're you know, we've been talking a little bit about Ron Rivera and what he said on the Score yesterday. There were a couple of things he gave his backing to Cam Newton, said that not to be surprised, he wouldn't bet against him having a big bounce back. He also said that in terms of discussing the team name, it's a discussion for another time, and sort of did not want to get into the conversation about that. And we know that Daniel Snyder never wants to get into a conversation about that. And if not now, when? And maybe he just meant not the time on afternoon radio in Chicago, but it felt like it's not something that maybe he's been cautioned not to speak about it, because I would imagine that his personal feelings might have been difficult for him to admit to, given the stance of the owner.
Well, look, I mean, he signed on for that name when he took the job. If he had an issue with the name, then you look for another place to be a head coach. Now, you want to be a head coach, and the opportunity is there. And so that's part of what you do, and that's part of the compromise you make, and that's just the reality. There's only 32 of these jobs out there, and he wanted another one, and he was a great choice by the franchise. But I think he meant not narrowly now isn't the time, as in afternoon radio in Chicago. I sense that whether it's the NFL and Colin Kaepernick or Washington and the team name, there's an effort to just run out the clock until those who are clamoring for something more substantive move on to something else. And then if and when attention gets refocused on the name, there'll be another excuse. Now, at least he didn't go with the knee-jerk reaction that my understanding is he and others in the organization have relied on, which is the 2016 Washington Post poll, which I think is inherently flawed, showed that 90% of self-identifying Native Americans aren't offended by the name. That poll has been questioned repeatedly. It's been undermined by subsequent polling. There was a study posted on the Cal Berkeley website, where Ron Rivera went to school, that shows that the more active Native Americans are in tribal rituals and the more they closely identify with traditional Native American identity and behavior, the more offended they are by the name. So at least he didn't go with that right out of the gates, but I didn't like the response. And I understand he's in a tough spot, but you know, he recently said he's been tasked with leading the organization and he believes actions speak louder than words. Well, once you make that kind of blanket proclamation, you're telling everyone, if you mean what you say, that you do have the power to make a difference. You do have the ability to go into the owner's office and say, hey, Dan, now's the time to change this name. And it doesn't mean he has to threaten to quit, right? And if he gets fired, people are like, oh, he doesn't want to get fired. Well, if he gets fired, he gets all of his money. You can't fire a guy for cause because he comes out and says, you know what, this is probably a good time to change the name of the team. So I was disappointed by it because I was hoping that maybe he would be more open to the concept, but it seems like he just wants to turn the page and talk about something else.
Well, I think it stood out, Mike, is because 2 weeks ago or so, he issued a memo, didn't he, internally, that made this seem very contradictory in terms of his message, in terms of the approach. The memo, from what I understand in the reporting of it, was an email to team employees where he sounded more open to this kind of change or having this kind of discussion, which is why I think when he said it yesterday, it did seem more abrupt than maybe we expected.
And I'll tell you that during that time frame that he sent that email that did kind of broadly invite employees to raise anything that they may think of that could potentially advance the cause of social justice in this moment, there were efforts behind the scenes by people in the league, not in the league office, but people who work in the business, to try to persuade Ron Rivera to take up this fight. Now, those efforts have since ended unsuccessfully. But there has been an attempt, my understanding is, to get his attention and to get him focused on this. And I thought when I saw that email, hey, this is his way of opening the door to building some sort of an internal organic push that will be more likely to get the attention of ownership than people on the outside. Because anybody who owns or operates a business resents people who aren't in that business telling them how to run the business. That's just human nature. If you can build something that bubbles up from within the walls of the organization, it's harder to deny that. Now, maybe it's a work in progress. Maybe he's just being circumspect and careful, and he's willing to kind of take the fall for now while he tries to work on something internally that would ultimately result in change. But look around. Look at the things that are changing. In the week that, as J.A. Adonde pointed out on Twitter yesterday, Mississippi ditches the Confederate flag from the upper left corner of its own flag, how is this not the time to have that conversation in this moment where we are trying to right the wrongs that have been hiding in plain sight for decades? How is this not the time? And when it's a dictionary-defined slur, and you know, so many people push back, well, Native Americans aren't really offended. Well, how do you know they're not really offended? Well, it's not for anyone other than Native Americans to comment on this. Well, wait a minute. It's a dictionary-defined slur. So I continue to hold out hope that something will happen, but we saw what they're doing with George Preston Marshall in D.C. They're going to be doing this. If Dan Snyder ever does anything with that team that justifies him being memorialized with a statue or a monument or his name on the Ring of Fame, it's just a matter of time before he's getting the same treatment in the future that George Preston Marshall is getting now.
Mike, what was the biggest story coming out of New England? The idea that they got a quarterback in Cam Newton, or that they meanwhile, while they were doing that, were getting slapped on the wrist for another spy gate scandal, whatever, for, again, you know that it's a chronic problem if you're filming Cincinnati.
It was a beautiful exercise in PR manipulation, though, to leak that they had signed Cam Newton moments before the word came out. And I thought they dumped bad news on a Friday afternoon. See, in this new news cycle, there are no boundaries on the week. You can still dump bad news into a weekend. Everybody's working in the media and in the leagues every day. So you dump it Sunday night when hopefully no one's paying attention. So that's when that news was coming out anyway about the Patriots finally getting whacked for, I think, more their history than what they actually did that day, because I've yet to see any evidence that those yahoos that were dumb enough to film the Bengals sideline had any connection whatsoever to football operations. But to make that story not disappear, but be greatly minimized by Cam Newton's signing, it was a master stroke by the Patriots. It's why the Patriots are who they are. They always find a way in any situation to make chicken salad, and they did it on Sunday night.
I love the messaging yesterday of Cam on the treadmill during his 5-minute Instagram video explaining his point of view and his motivation. And Mike, I think he's going to be highly motivated. You wonder if he's going to be highly healthy. You wonder if he's going to be somebody that can give them what they need. Is that why it took until June 28th for him to sign with the team? And do you think it's a worthwhile risk if you're Bill Belichick, right?
Well, financially, it's no risk at all. He took a far bigger risk with Antonio Brown last year. But when you look at his history with New England, once you start winning Super Bowls, you can roll the dice on a lot of different guys. It was a roll of the dice with Randy Moss. It was a roll of the dice with Rob Gronkowski, who plunged into round two because of a chronic back problem. He rolled the dice, Belichick did, after the 2011 lockout, trading for Chad Johnson and Albert Haynesworth. And people thought, wow, that's really gutsy. But the thing is, there's no downside if it blows up on him. And even though the financial aspect of this makes it not a gamble, it's still a gamble from the perspective of turning everything on its head, all the settled expectations for internally what the Patriots were going to be this year. Jared Stidham, Patriot way, next man up, here we go. And the reality is that you're taking a chance at the most important position on the field, that if Cam Newton doesn't work out, then how do you put the toothpaste back in the tube, and how do you get guys to rally around Jared Stidham if Newton's either not healthy or just doesn't fit? And look, this guy is uniquely individual. He has a way of doing things that doesn't mesh with that robotic approach that Patriots players have to have. And there's a chance it's just not going to work. There's a chance he's just not going to fit. You know, Chad Johnson ultimately didn't fit. And I think that because he had to check his personality and his individuality at the door, it kept him from ever really becoming who he could be. So it is a calculated risk, but the upside is enormous. It's an MVP, and if he's healthy, Cam Newton is a guy who can help the Patriots get back to pretty much where they've been the past 20 years. And what a handoff from Tom Brady to Cam Newton if this works out. And if it doesn't, then, you know, Bill Belichick keeps moving. Nobody's going to say he's an idiot if it doesn't work out. That's the benefit of winning 6 Super Bowls.
Are you at all surprised, Mike, that the teams continue to practice, that there still are players getting together and working out despite all that has been talked about? We've certainly seen Tom Brady go about it. Now Kyler Murray is working out with some of his teammates in Texas, and there's surges going on in Florida and Texas. Does it surprise you at all that this hasn't been ordered to cease or encouraged to stop? I mean, they've been encouraged to stop, but it doesn't appear like it's stopping in any fashion.
Yeah, unless and until somebody has the power to tell these guys do not do it and can back it up with some form of tangible consequence, they're going to keep doing it. The thing that has stunned me, though, and I got to give Kyler Murray and his teammates credit, because they were together last Sunday to Wednesday, and they had everything planned, and then a day before Kyler Murray was paying to bring 20 guys to Dallas, the NFLPA said, we recommend you don't do any of this until camp opens. Kyler Murray and his teammates did not tweet out videos. They did not put things on Instagram to rub it in the NFLPA's face. Tom Brady, for whatever reason, vanity and ego run amok, desire to project whatever message he wants to project to his 7.7 million Instagram followers overcame what should have been discretion. And really think about it. If the NFLPA is telling these guys, don't do it, and you have reason to think that other quarterbacks with other teams are going to comply with that advice, why are you putting out there that you're doing it? Because all it's going to do is encourage other quarterbacks on other teams to do the same thing, thereby eliminating the strategic edge that you acquire by doing it when others aren't. So it's just stupid to announce it to the world. Beyond the fact that you're giving the NFLPA the middle finger and sending a horrible message that will be heeded by younger players, by anyone who is on this end of the spectrum where it's just the flu, it's just a hoax, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Beyond how irresponsible it is socially, it's stupid because he squandered his edge. Because we saw all the videos last week, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Matthew Stafford, all these guys are doing it because they see Tom Brady's doing it. Now, they may be doing it anyway, but seeing Tom Brady blatantly do it is not going to keep guys from getting off their couch and going out and working with their teammates.
Right. So the NFL remains steadfast, Mike. July 28th is the date training camps open. How closely, though, are NFL officials watching what happens with Major League Baseball's return to play, with the NBA's, you know, descending into Florida in Orlando, and the way the NHL has now maybe talked about pushing back its phases a little bit? How closely will this be monitored and keep an open mind, and maybe they'll have to push back their dates as well?
Well, I think that they are watching things very, very carefully. I think that there's an element of let's see how all this goes that the NFL doesn't want to admit right now. But we're getting closer and closer to the point where the rubber meets the road. And something I wrote yesterday, July 28 is when camps open. Teams were allowed to have rookies show up a few days early. There's at least one team that isn't even going to bother. Think about that. You haven't had your rookies in the building at all. You've never even had a chance to shake their hands, for crying out loud, right? And teams are going to choose to not bring in their rookies a few days early because they're scrambling to get everything ready. They're scrambling to comply with the protocols. They're scrambling to get everything in place so they have some hope of controlling the spread of this virus in their facilities when training camp opens. And, you know, the thing that concerns me more than anyone else, and there's comments out there from Shaq Barrett, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive end, he's concerned about going back to Florida. I'd be concerned about going anywhere where the virus seems to be washing through the population unchecked right now. So it's going to be difficult for the NFL. The Saints have sent out a clear message, wear a mask. For whatever reason, the issue became politicized a couple of months ago. It's ridiculous that it ever was, and I hope that that pendulum is swinging toward people realizing that if you want to be a responsible citizen, if you want to protect yourself, if you want to protect others, and ultimately, if you want to be selfish and just say, I want my football this fall, throw all the other reasons away. If you want your football this fall, put a damn mask on. And I think that's the message that the NFL needs to start getting out to everyone, or this is just going to be a house of cards that falls apart by the time we get to the middle of September.
Great stuff, Mike. Thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Thanks, guys.
That is Mike Florio. Always a joy. David, great show today. Great talking to you. I want to thank everyone for calling, texting, and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
Yeah, it means a lot to us. Thanks to our guy, Dustin Rhodes.
You're the only guy in America who could lose 25 pounds, get in great shape, and still have handlebars and a gut.
Wow. That's that, Dustin. Thanks to Kevin.
Bro, I'm risking my life.
Don't play that other cut because I can't get it out of my head. That's Kevin Seapack, of course. And Ray, bless you, Ray. God bless you for all your hard work.
If I get the Rona, on top of that, if I that's get it. The Rona, guess what happens with that?
Now, all day, David. That's in my head all day.
It's all day long. Okay. Blake Snell. Have a great day, Molly.
All right, buddy. God bless. It's Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
That segment brought to you by Door Systems, now offering touch-free doors. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR.
End the story.
I see you soon, baby.
If it is to be said, so it be. So it is.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us, and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.